Hello, it is Celeste here on the Sales Edge podcast. I'm excited to talk with Nick Bon. He's about to launch his own podcast. We met on LinkedIn. Thank you so much for being a guest today. Tell us a little bit about your current seat, and then we'll dive into this sales podcast that you are launching.
Thanks, Celeste. So pumped to be on. Thanks for having me on. Account executive at Drata. So we do security compliance for startups and mid-market and large companies. So started my journey 5 years ago as an SDR in the multi-factor authentication space and worked my way up to AE.
A lot of times when I'm talking to those who are in a sales leadership role, we forget that the majority of our team and like the meat of the people who are helping us get to where we need to be really start in this SDR AE space. And they're usually the ones who are not only customer facing, but they're hearing what's going on, like boots on the ground, what is changing, how the customer journey is changing, and how ticked off buyers are that most sellers are coming from a product approach. You're in an interesting space in that multi-factor authentication ticks people off. Don't get me wrong, Salesforce, every time I log in, I got to go to another. But it is there to help us. So I'm curious, how, because you're now about to advise some SDRs and also you've come from that seat, how do you move away from talking about product, especially for new sales reps within an org, when it's like what we want to do because it's our safe spot and what we know?
Great question. I don't know if I'm a glutton for punishment, selling things that people just don't want to talk about, right? It's people ask, what do you do? Well, I'm in sales. Oh, what do you sell? Multi-factor authentication or security compliance. I'm a nerd like that, but there's a real need for it. SDRs do focus a lot on product. And I think in a lot of situations, companies push product knowledge so much on their SDRs that that's what they focus on. And they're brand new in their selling careers, right? So they don't know any better. They're going through a bunch of enablement videos. And don't get me wrong, you should know your product, but start with the buyer and start with the pains that they have. And as an SDR, a really good way that I did that was talk to other account executives, not other SDRs that were going through the same types of training, like get outside of that organization or find SDRs that are buyer centric and that know those problems. That's definitely something I think that a lot of SDRs that are getting promoted right now, they're focusing on the pains versus I can talk about this feature with you on this 30-second cold call.
Yeah, it's interesting because there's obviously a lot on LinkedIn right now in the SDR space, companies who are hiring SDRs, that seems to be the most open position within a company. It's really stemming from this place where economic times have changed. The big well has dried up. You can only be new and fancy for so long with people flocking to you about your product. And now you really have to build a case for change. And a lot of that is now coming down to SDRs going outbound. Not even SDRs, AEs as well, going outbound in this shift of 80, 90%. I talked to a company the other day, 100% inbound. And I'm like thinking to myself, your time is coming.
Only a matter of time.
This focus on, you call it pains, I like to call it problems. I have a big bruise on my shoulder right here. I don't want my husband coming up and poking that. I know I have a bruise. It's not life threatening, so I'm not going to worry about it. How, like the SDRs that you work with, how are you advising them when they do go down that technical path? How are you calling that out so that they can change that behavior and feel more comfortable talking about problems in a more elevated business conversations when they're so new in their career?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. And really, in our industry, what we sell, I won't go too far into the weeds of it, but basically, the main pain or problem that folks face is as they move up market, they start to have conversations with enterprise companies, and these enterprise companies are asking them, are you SOC 2 compliant? Are you ISO 27001 compliant? What are you doing to keep my data secure? How do I trust you? That's the main thing, right? Is building that trust. And we can talk about automation with Drata and all these different features. But at the end of the day, the SDRs that are really crushing it and doing well, they're the ones that actually understand that, okay, this is a revenue opportunity for our customers and also our buyers to unlock different markets, to move to larger deals, because that's really the value of it. And I think our enablement team's doing a pretty good job of pushing that problem-centric approach. And definitely seeing a shift in the last couple of years have been inbound. It's been kind of the rosy, sunny days in SaaS. And now it's definitely harder. Money's dried up. Money's more expensive now with interest rates. And really, there's a stronger shift towards outbound. So our team has started to lead with that problem messaging as opposed to the feature messaging, which is definitely the big thing on LinkedIn right now, or at least it was a couple of weeks ago, was so out for 2024 or so in for 2024. And so the feature pushing is so out.
So out. You're right. We're not that far into 2024. It's still out. And I would assume with everything that's happening with email, it'll be even further out if you go that route. And it's interesting because you're in this space. So in gap selling, when we do our training, we have a slide that's specific to what you all are facing, which is kind of this like risk analysis. So a lot of times in like cybersecurity, any type of compliance, you're not dealing with something that may have happened, a risk that it could happen. Whereas a lot of other buyers are experiencing something in their current state. And it's similar to, my dad's a physician, he has malpractice insurance. Well, what happens should you get hit with a malpractice claim? You have to play that out. And it's very rare that you would experience that. I think my dad, 45 years in the business, maybe one malpractice claim in his whole career with someone who that worked for him, but on his malpractice. But he buys that insurance because if you get hit with a claim and you do not have that insurance, like the risk does not outweigh that reward, or vice versa. Mm-hmm. The people that you're selling to probably don't even understand it. Many of them are, know we have to do this, but we don't know why or like what it is. It's a different language. Right. So really educating them on, if this isn't happening now, this is what could happen. If it's happened, how many times has it happened? And then what are those impacts to the organization? I was on a call this morning, and this is where the team was missing. They could get the technical problems, which is where many sellers live. We all love our product. Business problems, okay, maybe turnover, churn, like things that you can't fix like this. The impacts is where they were having a really hard time with. And I would assume for some younger BDRs, maybe even some VPs of sales, CROs, that's what we miss, is what is the impact to the organization? That's where the motivation to buy or changes. It lives within those impacts. If we can't clearly define those impacts. Yep. All right. So I went off on a tangent there. You, 5 years in now, seen a lot of stuff, obviously problems over product and features. You told me prior to this, you were starting a podcast. Tell us about that. Where did this arise from? What is the concept?
Yeah, so it arose out of a little bit of extra time on my hands during maternity leave. I'm back this week. But essentially, I asked myself over paternity leave, okay, what am I building for myself, for my wife, for my son, that is outside of, you know, Drata in the career and all of that. And it really came down to, okay, I've been posting on LinkedIn for a while. I enjoy the interaction. I enjoy the community. What if I go all in on that? What if I start to build this brand? And then that brought me to the question, okay, what can I actually teach on? What can I teach people? And I have been an SDR. I was an SDR for 2 years and got promoted out of that role into an account executive selling role. And so that is what I want to help folks with, is the new sellers, the young sellers, both in their SDR roles and the new AEs. I want to help them take their next step, but specifically those SDRs who are looking to get promoted. And so here shortly, I'll be recording the first episode of the Promotable SDR podcast. So it'll only feature guests that have been promoted from an SDR role up and out within the last couple of years, because I want to keep it recent.
This is a great niche, sadly, for both you and myself, because what is happening, or what I'm seeing in conversations with individual contributors, as well as sales leadership, is we don't have any training within the company. Everybody's able to do their own thing. And what we find is that reps are either leaving, they get complacent, you start seeing quota slip, maybe there's negative surveys around culture. Yep. there's a lot of chatter online or on these like dark webby type of communities where people are fed up with the lack of, I can't show up and throw up at my job. Like, I need tools, mm-hmm. resources, training in order to get me to where I want to go. And if it's not being mm-hmm. offered here, I'm going to look elsewhere. What would you say to companies that aren't offering any type of training methodology plan? What is their risk? Tell us about their risk.
Yeah, the risk. I think you hit the nail on the head, right? Is the risk is attrition. People leaving. I know that I'm not happy if I'm mm-hmm. not growing. And I have a clear line of sight of where I'm going personally. And I think it's a massive opportunity to attract a talent with a roadmap. I'm a very roadmap oriented person. When I joined Duo Security back in the day, that was my first SDR role. There is a well-defined culture of promotion internally to the selling role, to the full AE role. So much so that there were really cool traditions back when we went to these crazy things called offices, that they would hang up a jersey of the SDR who got promoted from an SDR to an AE role. It would have the year that they were promoted and their last name. And so every SDR that came into that, you know, selling area for SDRs would see those jerseys. And it's like, that is the kind of culture that you want to instill, because these are folks that if you're hiring the right people, they're uber motivated to make moves in the organization, to learn the product, to learn the pains, and honestly can be some of your best sellers. So that's why I'm really excited about the podcast, because I'm going to get to talk to those, exactly those folks. And a lot of people have moved out of those roles and are doing amazing things.
Yeah, and they learn a lot. So let me ask you, mm-hmm. in that company, your first company, where there was a lot of internal promotion, celebration around that, mm-hmm. you know, emphasis sounds like on that training and development piece, will or skill? A new SDR comes in, which one is going to have them on that trajectory, do you believe? That's like, obviously, self-diagnosing. I mean, we don't know, but like, will or skill?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be will that can turn into skill, I think, is really how that would roll. Sure, you have some people that come in and are, I'm not personally one of those, but like those that are coming in extroverted, they're super comfortable talking to strangers. I wasn't that way when I was in this role, in the SDR role to start. So for me, it was will that turned into skill eventually over tons of repetition and training and call shadowing and picking the brains of the top performers around me to get to the level of where I wanted to go. So definitely I'll answer the question kind of not one or the other, but it's will that turned into skill.
I trained a lot of people in my life, and usually could, after a while, after I got into sales leadership and had some time under my belt, I would much rather take someone that had the will than the skill. I think it's easier to mm-hmm. teach skill. It's much harder to teach will. So I'm there with you, but I do believe we're at this place of companies that are seeing some of these indicators, right? Churn, low win mm-hmm. rates, decline, and are just pumping more into the top of the funnel versus peeling back the onion layers and saying, do we have a people problem? Do we have a process problem? Do we, as you mentioned, do we have a culture problem? I saw someone post today on LinkedIn. She talks a lot about like content and brand building. And she was saying like, bro, nobody cares about all the internal stuff going on within your organization, right? Use that for Slack channels. If you are an organization where the CEO puts something out and then everybody's regurgitating it, this isn't developing people. It's not giving them a voice or a brand. Correct. And we're seeing that. And I'm assuming a direct correlation between lower employee satisfaction, probably higher turnover. And I do believe that comes, like you said, from that roadmap from day one, working with individuals one-on-one on this is what the opportunity looks like. This is the mm-hmm. development plan to get here. Like, let's help co-create this. How do we get that? And what happens is that is a very one-on-one personalization based on their will and their skill versus mm-hmm. what I've been hearing from larger corporations, from individual contributors. My manager doesn't have time. I never talk to them. We don't have a one-on-one. There's no oversight. So I do think that we're in for some rough waters here. So that aside, all right. So you went from SDR, AE. Mm-hmm. Tell me what, if you were talking to your former self and you're putting on my Superman costume, this is the cape I'm wearing. What is your sales edge? What makes you unique?
Yeah. Been in development for the last 5 years. And I think one of the main things, there's two main things, and they play well together, which the first is to not be overly focused on process when you're coming in to talk with a buyer. So it's really good to have a background in a process, but you're talking to a person at the end of the day. It's a relationship. It's something where you are figuring out where they're at in their journey, and then you're joining alongside them. And then that second side is being extremely focused on being mm-hmm. buyer centric. So an example of something that I just started doing is in my follow-up emails after demos, tying those follow-ups specifically to one of the criteria that they've mentioned on the call. And I call that out when I send the message, like, look, all my follow-ups, or most at least of my follow-ups, are going to tie directly back to one of your buying criteria, so that this is actually a useful piece for you to actually read. And so being buyer-centric and then people over process, but still having a process, I'd say those are my two edges.
So what I hear you saying is really listening to your buyer, listening for clues, that like those breadcrumbs, something that's important to them, something that may be going on in their environment that would change the direction of where you wanted to go, whether that's timing, something came up, something that they told you personally, and really making sure that they feel heard is what I hear. And I love that, because when we show up with our buyers and do not attach to the outcome, and this took me like 30 years to learn, maybe more. I still do it sometimes. Like, we're salespeople. We're salespeople. Like those, mm-hmm. whatever they are. I almost called them memes, but they're not. They're a little, I don't know, I'm older. A video on the Instagram, a reel. Yeah. That's what it's called.
A reel. There you go. We got there.
We tend to want to attach ourselves to the outcome. And what does this commission mean? And what does this mean to my quota? And we constantly have to bring ourselves back. The buyer doesn't care about any of that, right? They care about themselves. So how do we become more empathetic to what they're going through in their current state and listen without attaching to an outcome? So it sounds like you're showing up authentically, listening, detaching from an outcome, but then really rooting them back into something that they said, so they can help draw that same conclusion that you did, that they maybe didn't put two and two together. That clearly has been learned from time in the seat. It's not something that the BDR who started out, you would have known. You probably would have attached to your product.
Oh, no. Yeah.
All right. So I'm loving that, this buyer centricity. We keep hearing this phrase coming out. I think Keenan, who wrote Gap Selling, is working on a second book eventually that really comes from the buyer's standpoint. So it'll be interesting when it comes out. They've done a huge survey. I would assume it will say people prefer a rep-free environment. Nothing new that we've heard, but I'm interested to see what those statistics are as it relates to buyer centricity versus taking a seller's approach, which most of us still do from time to time. I've also heard of a couple organizations here recently that will flat out say that they use BANT as a qualification method, which gets back to that like checklist, answer questions that are self-serving to me so I can move you through my buying process. Also icky.
Buyers are tired of that, right? Nobody wants to be walked through a self-centered checklist that is clearly, you know, just for my benefit as a seller to understand. A much better way to position that is towards wherever you want to put it into the call. You can say things to set expectations appropriately on my side, or just be completely upfront about, I just need to know this. This is a selfish question. You earn the right to ask those questions after you've walked through the journey and you've attached yourself not to your own outcome, but to the buyer's outcome. And then your outcome follows that. If it doesn't, your outcome isn't going
to
be that
great. I could have a bell. I would be ringing it here. And that is tough to show up present and listen. And it is also difficult if you're working in an environment where there is no methodology, you're given a checklist, right? You don't have anybody to model that behavior after. Those companies are doing themselves a disservice because our buyers are screaming, we don't want this. Please stop. So over these past 5 years and your progression to now where you're going to be launching your own podcast, tons of sales, let's say advice being thrown at us. You are on LinkedIn quite often. Mm-hmm. I am too. I definitely get LinkedIn fatigue. So much comes at you with like, do this, don't do that, do this. Today we're doing this. Now don't do this. Yep. It's hard to know which way to navigate. What is some really poor advice you've been given over the years that you would like to say, please stop, or we have to bust this myth. This isn't working.
I want to go to the filter thing real quick, which is yes, LinkedIn fatigue is so real. And I've had to like filter through as like, these are the people that I want to listen to because I know I've applied what they've done and it's worked. Or also I can tell like they've spent time in the actual roles. And that's very important to be very stringent about maintaining that LinkedIn diet and what comes
LinkedIn
in the feed.
Diet. Otherwise it's I like that.
Yeah. You got to be careful with what you're putting in with the LinkedIn diet. But to answer your question, so I think one of the things, it's good advice, but it can be taken too far, is the upfront contract that folks put down on calls. So it's good to have an upfront contract with buyers when you're on a call with them, just to let them know what's going on. But it's being delivered and it must be this long and it must be rigid. And I think a lot of times when folks rush through the I'm talking to a person and they just go for that upfront contract, that they engage the buyer in that track of, okay, sales call, here we go. I'm going through this, as opposed to the new way, which is providing an agenda, but also saying, okay, this is what I assume you're coming to us because this is what buyers come to us all the time for. Injecting some of that experience with other clients into that agenda and tying it back to the actual buyer, as opposed to walking them through your checklist of what you want to accomplish in the call. So it's good to have an upfront contract, but again, people over process. It's important how it's delivered.
All right.
Delivered.
So for anybody listening who's like a VP of sales, CRO, sales leader, first time in tech, like would probably be like, what the heck did he just say? Upfront contract. And this is something that I've actually learned through my time. So I'm a certified gap selling training partner, which means I'm like a trainer by nature. I've been in sales and marketing my whole life. Training and selling, gap selling at the same time are two different things, are two different skill sets. So I'm right there with you in the sales seat, making flubs, asking a self-diagnosing question, taking it back, you know, oh, I went down the rabbit hole, asked too many probing questions, because it's an ever evolving thing. We're honing our sales skills. But if someone is like, what do they mean upfront contract? My team doesn't do that. Give us an example of a poor upfront contract.
Yeah. Thanks, Les, for joining the call today. Here's the agenda. You know, typically we spend a couple minutes going through, you know, some questions that I have for you. I'll jump into the demo, give you an overview, and then we can establish next steps after that. Even how I said that, right? I've said it before, right? And it's something that reps get in a very monotone way of delivering, and it just becomes you're sitting in your seat in an airplane and they're starting to give you the oxygen mask. And it's like, engage, sales call mode, right? As opposed to, Celeste, thanks for taking the call. Typically folks join calls with me for X reason or Y reason. I really want to dig in because I think based on your company, it might be the why reason. So I have a hypothesis behind that. I'd love to share with you. Adding that tweak to show, one, you've done your research. You actually care about the buyer and you're not just trying to walk them through your steps.
Yes.
Because they have their own steps. And
that subtle shift that you
exactly.
have of being completely seller-centric to that subtle shift in buyer centricity.
Yes.
Definitely. I mean, I think that analogy that you used from the airplane mode is like spot on. How many times do we do that? Where you're like, oh, I've heard this before, I'm checking out, versus really including them in the conversation. I loved how you said that hypothesis as well. We love to use hypothesis. I do that in a lot of my notes.
Nailed it.
Where after a call, and that's something else people often are like, well, hurry up and get me to the demo or get me to the pricing. When you haven't uncovered all the information, you don't even know you can help them. So typically for me, it's at least 2 discovery calls, sometimes 3, sometimes 4. But I love to put in my notes, like, what information did I not capture? What am I really curious about? What hypothesis can I draw from the information they gave me? What could be going on within the organization? I want to dive deeper into that. So I love how you frame that, the hypothesis. All right, so we're coming up on time. I like to keep these like snackable. So what's next for you? This podcast, who would you love to have on? Listeners, tell us about that so we can get some listeners lined up for you or some guests lined up for you.
So what's next? So I'm recording a couple of episodes. I want to get 3 or 4 recorded before I actually publish. It's out on Spotify and Apple Podcasts right now, just as a trailer. But if you are interested, you can go follow the podcast when episodes drop and just get notified when they're available. I'm looking for SDRs, former SDRs who've been promoted into AE roles, into account management roles. Maybe it was 3 or 4 years ago and you have hit the fast track and you're in a VP role or some sort of sales leadership role. I want to talk to those folks. So that's really who I want to talk to. And yeah, it should be out here in mid to late February. If I can really line up those guests, I got the first 3 lined up. So really, really pumped about it. But yeah, Spotify, Apple Podcasts. If you're interested in being a guest, you can shoot me a DM.
Excellent.
On LinkedIn.
So that's something that you're working on, like passion project, really bridging the gap. No pun intended. People who are in the SDR seat want to get promoted, maybe are lacking tools, resources, training, mentorship. I'm going to throw a zinger at you that I sound like my dad talking. I'm going to throw a zinger at you that I didn't prepare you for from a professional standpoint, aside from the podcast. What is something you're working on this year in your role?
I'm working on a lot of things, but this is the first year that I'm actually going to build out my own sales process. So I've been using Notion for a lot of this organization of different things I'm doing on LinkedIn, podcast, at Drata, and I'm building out my own sales playbook. So coming from top reps at Drata, top reps that I've worked with in the past, and putting this together and really applying it to my role at Drata with the ultimate goal of getting to that President's Club at the end of the year in January. That's something that I'm working on in my role. It's kind of a bigger, less tactical thing, but it's going to be filled with a bunch of tactical stuff. So maybe eventually we'll make that available in some format, but that's what I'm working
like
on right
lesson,
now. Just to be a better
seller.
In
the field, best practices, working on building out your own brand, what that looks like, how that applies to the sales role. I love it.
I've been promoted from SDR to AE and been a top performer as an AE. So I know that early realm really well, but now it's just a matter of, okay, let's perfect the deal management. Let's perfect getting into those larger deals and managing those cycles. And so, yeah, maybe a book. I'm working on an SDR promotion frameworks ebook right now too. So that's also a evenings and weekends project. So there's all sorts of info on that on my LinkedIn page too.
Awesome.
My profile.
Well, it's been a pleasure. I know as a new parent, your first week back, I appreciate you sharing some insights on what it's like to switch from seller centricity to being buyer centric. Also that there is hope for those outside of an organization that don't provide any training to have individuals such as yourself to look up to, to ask questions to follow along with. So we're excited for that launch. And thank you for spending your afternoon with us here. I will share all of the links to your Spotify. I'll grab that so listeners can find you and follow along on that journey, as it's going to be, I'm sure, riveting tales from the SDR seat and how to get promoted. I'm sure you'll have some doozies in there as well, like what to do and what not to do. So appreciate your insights. Yeah, this is what happens when you're like a Gen Y, Gen X, you're on the cusp of, you have no clue what the teens are talking about these days, but also still use some of your parents' language that most people don't know either. Zinger being one of those words.
I might add that to the frameworks, just like little call outs.
Zinger
call outs. If you see that, you inspired it.
Well, thanks. I got a lot of other random useless knowledge throughout my years, but it's been such a pleasure. Thanks for staying with us here.
Yeah.